freedom this past week.
Yeah.
That might be an interesting topic to talk about.
Well, I've done
academic Apple freedom season. Or the lack of academic freedom?
Well, I guess you could say the lack of. So, I'm going to college right now, right?
Okay.
And I'm having to retake freshman composition and all that. So I was given this assignment that I had to write an argumentative essay saying that like things like stem cell research and egg donation, you had to either argue for or against it, and then therefore say that, you know, if it's a good thing, then, you know, then it should be regulated, and if it's a bad thing, it should be outlawed. And I thought, wait a minute, that's a ridiculous question, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. False dichotomy.
Thank you. So I did some research, and I found this great article by Walter Block that I based a lot of my essay on, right?
Nice.
So I turned the paper in, and it was a halfway decent paper. I mean it wasn't great. It's not, you know, it's not a book. It's just a, you know, 6-page essay or whatever. I thought I did a reasonably good job of it, so I decided to send a copy to Walter Block. I mean, you guys are familiar with him, right? Or no?
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. Yeah, he writes for Lou Rockwell. Yeah, that's what I heard him interviewed a few times. He's great.
Yeah, oh yeah. So I just on a whim, I decided to email a copy of my paper to him and just say, you know, hey, you know, I wrote this. I had this professor who, you know, I tried to raise the argument that, you know, that you can't, you know, just because something is, you know, good does not equal legal, and bad does not equal illegal.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking, you know, apples and oranges on a grand scale.
We're running into a commercial here. We're going to keep you around for after the commercial, though. We're going to keep you around and bat you around like a cat with a mouse. No, we're kidding.
Yeah. So, but, definitely.
So I'll tell you again after the commercial. But the end result was that Dr. Block emails me back and he says, wow, this paper is fantastic.
Nice.
You want me to help publish it?
Nice. you should send it to us, man. Maybe we could read a few paragraphs on the
Hi, I'm Nima Badati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape.
I'm 40 years old, going back to college, you know, and I go to school near Fort Hood, Texas, right? So, you know, you want to talk about, like, statism, you know, this is not the kind of community where people question the almighty power of the state. You know, God forbid.
They're all employed by the state.
You get shut down like right away, you know.
We're still recording, by the way.
So
you keep talking.
So are you out near Killeen then? Is that about where you are?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, Copper's Cove. I know you went to school in Austin, didn't you, Nima?
Yeah. University of Texas.
You know where Copper's Cove is. It's right up there by Fort Hood.
It's out west somewhere, so, through the hills.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, for as so-called patriotic, and I really hate that word, as people are around here, you know, the idea that it's like, boy, you start talking about individual freedom, you know, property rights, liberty, all that kind of stuff, and people just, ooh. It goes over like a lead balloon.
Like it if you talk about fight for our freedoms.
Well, yeah.
Hey, are you sure? Are you sure you don't still have your radio on? I'm getting echo on you.
I'm absolutely positive I don't have my radio.
It must be something in the LRN server then. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not getting any echo either. The signal sounds clean to me.
All right, but I'm recording for the show, so.
That's true. You're the one recording.
For the archives.
Do you want to troubleshoot your mixer a little bit and just rule some things out, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me stop recording. I didn't record the first like 3 minutes of this. I forgot to, from the hippie Valium I took.
I took a hippie Valium before the show. I thought you
no.
Took
I took
night.
A hippie Valium last like 6 hours before I got up. You know, I took a melatonin, those over the counter sleeping pills.
Yeah.
They're really
just
a nutrient that exists in your body anyway, but it's a big dose of it. Yeah, they knock me out. I wake up real mellow and spacey.
Okay. My speaker's on.
Yeah, I thought
so.
I thought recording engineer extraordinaire Nima Badati wouldn't do that, but you did.
You thought wrong, man.
Okay.
You thought wrong.
It's all that
hippie
valley of sports drink you're drinking.
I suppose.
What
we got,
those? Anyway, go ahead.
Drank. Or Rockstar Relax, the anti-energy drinks. I'm not drinking one right now. I got my, mix my good old
red,
coffee here.
If you mix them with a Red Bull, it's the poor man's Speedball.
Poor man's Speedball, baby. Yeah. And always find a way around the state. Speaking of finding a way around the state, Brian, he's with us here. He wrote a paper. I guess his professor told him to write about stem cell research and whether the government should promote it or ban it. And he was like, wait a minute. Those are two stupid choices. Go ahead and finish telling us about that.
Let me interject really quick here, too. You called that the false – what did you call it?
False dichotomy.
Yeah. There's another phrase which is related, which I actually wanted to talk about at some point, is the false dilemma, which is –
It's so many things, actually. It's a false dichotomy. It's a false dilemma. It's an appeal to authority, and it's also begging the question.
Yeah.
You know, it's assuming that something is treating something that's debatable as if it weren't debatable.
I think it's also – there's probably some flavoring of red herring in there too, in that gumbo.
And yeah. The bottom line is that the statist approach, the idea that government should have authority to rule and regulate anything and everything in our lives is so fraught with logical fallacies. It's like, where do you begin?
I was just going to say, so when you go to a state-run school now, it seems like you're, basically people are getting a master's degree in logical fallacies without without ever being taught how to recognize logical fallacies they used to in school.
Well, and you're okay as long as you don't – you can question anything else. Just don't question the state.
There's a book.
That's the message that you're given in class. You raise the question in class – and the professor just tries to poo-poo you and tells you to shut up, and the other poor students in the class just look dumbfounded, like deer's caught in the headlights.
Yeah, there's a book called The Professors, The 101 Most Dangerous Academics by Horowitz, David Horowitz, mm-hmm. that right-wing guy that used to be a communist. And he also, I've seen him on TV a lot, and he's written books basically claiming that there's a huge left-wing bias in the media, and we need to correct – in academia, and that we need to correct that. And he'll find isolated instances of, some Republican student writing a paper from a Republican point of view and failing when it's a good paper otherwise. But really, I think no matter what, there's a statist
bingo
point of view in academia. That's what you called to talk about, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and exactly. So I don't know if I guess I didn't get this in before you went to commercial, but so I finished this paper and I sent it to the professor, and then I decided, I had based a lot of my research on the work of Walter Block, so I decided just send, Walter, he publishes his email openly on the internet. So I thought, well, I just went, I sent him a copy of it with a kind of a cover email of sorts saying, hey, I just want to thank you for all the help that you've given me. I live in an intensely statist and very pro-military community where, the ideas of freedom and liberty really are, they're poo-pooed. And so I just wanted to thank you. And that's all my intention was. And he writes me back within 24 hours to say, wow, this is a great paper and I would like to help you get it published. So, I forwarded his response to my professor. Awesome. I ended up getting an A in the class mainly because of that. But it's, wow. I mean, the idea that it's like, wait a minute. So, this is Walter Block. The guy is, PhD and published in I don't know how many damn places.
He is a professor somewhere.
He is a professor. Yeah. Loyola University.
Loyola have a bunch of libertarian professors?
I think it's just Walter Block, but I'm not sure.
He's big enough for all of them, of New Orleans.
There you go.
That's exactly. New Orleans, right?
Exactly. But it was I just wanted to call you and let you know, it's like sometimes, we got to find small victories. And I considered this one. In fact, my professor even wrote me back and saying, wow, you took this assignment in a way that, in 10 years of teaching, no other student had ever taken it.
Wow.
And I was like, really, in 10 years, you've never had a student that has questioned the state?
I'd tell your teacher that you're not teaching right.
Well, the class is over now. This past week was finals week, so I'm done with him. But yeah, that's exactly it. He's not. It's like, you want to teach critical thinking skills? Okay, let's talk about critical thinking skills. Because, libertarians and anarchists tend to have the most critical thinking skills. We're willing to question
anything and everything. We're willing to question the state. We're willing to question, you know, we're willing to question God. We're willing to question everything that we see as being so institutionalized in our lives from a logical standpoint. You know,
I mean, right. Well, what I think it is I think critical thinkers end up being libertarians because they are the ones who question things. So they naturally get led to that.
In the 60s, and 70s, they actually taught, you know, how to recognize logical fallacies, and they had debate teams, and a lot of schools don't have those anymore. And if they do, it's probably just, you know, those kind of false dichotomies and false, what did we say?
False dilemma.
Dilemma. But also in the 60s, teachers were more anti-state because then it seemed like the state was unstoppable. I don't know what it is. It's now it's like they're anti-Republicans, most teachers I've met and most stories I've heard. But they're very pro-state. You know, they're very like, Obama is wonderful. The New World Order is wonderful. And in the 60s, there were teachers that took chances more and just were anti-state. Not all of them, but that existed more. I want to go back to that. Where's the war protests of the 60s? That's what I want to know.
Oh, my. Tell me about it. You know, it's like, And I feel for you, Michael, because I'm aware that your stepson has just recently joined the Army, so, and I know that's a sensitive issue. And I just bring it up only because I'm a veteran myself. So, you know, coming from that standpoint, having seen, you know, firsthand, you know, what war is, and I ask myself the same question every day. Where the hell did the war protesters go?
Mm-hmm. Which branch of the service and where were you?
I was in the Army for 7.5 years, and I did 2 tours totaling a grand total of 27 months in Iraq.
Wow.
Was that before you left freedom, or did you grow
love of freedom while you were in the military? A really funny question. So on my first tour, I had a brief stint where I had a 15-month tour, and I had a stint within that where I had an office job at night, right, in a quiet office. So I'm sitting there doing nothing, just listening to the radio, right? I mean, not the commercial radio, the military radio monitoring communications okay. and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And I had a computer, and I had nothing to do all night long but sit there and surf the internet. And one thing leads to another, and I discover Murray Rothbard.
Nice.
And boy, you know, and I had months and months and months to just read. And then, you know, I'd read something and then I'd look outside the door and compare what I was reading to what I was seeing. 1 + 1 = 2. And one thing, you know, so it's like going to war. I mean, really, going to war made me anarchy.
Cool, man. Nice. Well, we're going to a commercial here. And I guess a lot of people would say thank you for your service. I'm just saying, wow.
No, bullshit. No,
I just say, wow. No.
It's not service, you know, something.
People that go to, is run that by go to work who believes and have paying and jobs in the free market,
that's service.
I existed for 7.5 years on stolen money.
Yeah,
exactly. People who are getting paid for their services are the ones serving people.
That service bullshit? Uh-uh. Nope. Mm-hmm.
So we're off the air now, but we'll talk another minute or two, and then I'm going to open it up for other callers. This does go in the archives, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, what do you do now? Are you in the private sector finally? You got away from the military?
Well, I got out of the Army, and I spent the first year out of the Army working for. We're off the air, right?
Yep. No, hang on. Let me stop recording. We're recording.
No, don't stop recording. Okay. I spent the first year out of the Army working for a very extremely the biggest you could possibly think of internet company, which was great.
Google. Microsoft.
I didn't say that. Things. He didn't say anything.
It's probably something along the lines of Andre.
He has a non-disclosure.
And then I went back to school. Yeah, so I'm getting I'm a full-time student.
Where do you live?
What's that?
Near Killeen, out in Copper's Cove.
Seems like Texas is where it's happening, man. It's where we're getting donations from these days.
Really?
And yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of angry former soldiers around here that are like, what the fuck?
Yeah. You know? What just happened? I imagine.
Exactly. Really?
Soldiers think. Yeah. Hey,
we're back. You can actually hear a Rhodes piano when it's unplugged because it has little tuning forks inside. It's really quiet, but
so you just hear like the click of the tuning fork whenever you.
No, you hear the music. You play the music, you hear the music. But you know, it's an acoustic instrument that's heavily amplified.
Nice. Basically. I didn't know that.
So we're back.
Damn.
So I have
we
a
are
comment.
Back. Yeah.
I have a comment.
All right.
I watched the movie last night, The People versus Larry Flint. You seen that?
Yeah, I saw it when I was a kid. I did think it was pretty funny. I wasn't a libertarian yet, but I remember loving how Larry Flint would just embarrass the judge.
Yeah, Larry Flint's a statist. I read his book, his sex book, Sex and History of the Founding Fathers and Sex, or whatever it's called, One Nation Under Sex, recently. Nice. I reviewed that on an early Fiendscast. But he's a statist, but you know he fought for rights within the state system, which I have respect for especially people as wildly successful as him. I mean, the New York Times filed an amicus brief on his Supreme Court case because it was so important for free speech in this country.
Yeah, yeah, for freedom of the press. You know, he's a giant advocate for that.
You know, we don't really believe in the Constitution because it's something we didn't sign, but we understand it's the law of the land, or should be. And at the end of that
but
movie,
don't you think that's the root of the problem, though, is people like Larry Flint, who understand freedom so well when it comes to their own personal interests, you know, his business, porno, you know, Hustler magazine.
Let me finish this. So let me finish this thought before we get 12 more calls.
All right.
Before you go into absolute anarchy is imperative, we must not give an inch. Let me say my little spiritual awakening I had.
Say your piece.
Yeah. I was watching this movie, and at the end of it, like, you know, good triumphs over evil. Basically, he wins the Supreme Court case, which keeps him out of prison for publishing this this article about some religious leader. Who was it? Anyway, it was you know, he published a cartoon that was like some famous religious leader having sex with
Falwell.
Falwell having sex with his mother in the outhouse. and you know, the Supreme Court basically says, yes, this is protected free speech, and he wins the case, and it basically is the reason we can still do a lot of what we can do, is that Supreme Court case. Well, we could still do it, but we'd get rounded up and shot. So when this, at the end of this movie, like, I was weeping with joy. And
yeah,
I felt kind of guilty all of a sudden. It's like, wait, am I being statist? You know, I'm weeping for this, like, because it's painted really kind of patriotic at the end. And it was like, and I thought, no, I'm not. I'm weeping for, like, freedom prevailing, you know, for, like, something good happening once in a while.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be a freedom fix, right? If we were podcasting back in the day when that happened, we would probably report it as a freedom fix. But I sort of waffle back and forth on that, too, because, you know, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker, makes the argument that the state will give you these little morsels. The state will back off every now and then, but it's only so that you don't notice all the other horrible things that it's doing.
Yeah, stop being such an anarchist for a minute. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
I'm not saying be stuck. I'm saying, like, come on, man, breathe a little bit and have a little life. And, like, not that you don't 24/7, but it's like, I think this gets back to the thing of, like, I want to talk less about, like, tyranny today and more about general stuff. It's just kind of like, I had a good moment and it was useful. And I didn't overanalyze it. And I didn't go to, well, Murray Rothbard said that, blah, blah, blah. No, it's like, I watched a movie and I wept with joy and it was good. Okay, man?
Yeah, man, that's good. I'm not hating on that at all.
DJ's laughing in the other room.
I'm just saying we still got to keep our eyes on the prize. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying don't feel joy. I'm not saying that's not – I mean, I said it was a freedom fix. I think that was a great thing. And if it touched you – I mean, because, yeah, you're right.
It touched me in special places.
It did. It touched you in special places. And in the end, that's all that really matters, is how you feel. And as long as you feel free – I mean, that's what real freedom is. So, I mean, it's obviously a good thing. But at the same time, I still – I don't want to become a statist, I guess.
Fiend phone.
Fiend phone. What the fiends are saying.
Hello, fiend. You're on the air. Fiends. Who is this? What's up?
Hey, what's going on? Is this Michael?
Yeah, who's this?
It's Rob from Hollywood. What's going on, man?
Hey, Rob. I think I know you. Do I know you?
Yeah, we know each other from Facebook, and I'm a big fan of some of your books.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, we've spoken a couple times. I don't exactly know what the podcast is about specifically today. You have a specific theme or an idea you guys are talking about?
Freedom.
No, man. Talk about whatever you want.
We decided we're going to have a new theme today, and it's freedom.
Freedom.
Yeah.
I feel like we've lost quite a bit of that in the last couple of years, boy. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
That's true. All right, we have Mitt Romney and Obama. Those are our choices. We didn't ask for them, but that's what we have. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, based on the fact that you're now in Wyoming and you're a big fan of gun laws as well as marijuana laws, I'm just curious, who do you want?
Well, it's a false dichotomy. It's a false, what's the word, Nima? A false, the other
no,
one.
No, you got it. Keep going.
But no, but there's another one too. It's a false dilemma. I like that term better. It's related. It's that there's a dilemma. You have to pick one or the other. And that's a false dilemma. I'm opted out, man. And there's people who say, there's people I know and like and love who say, no, you got to pick the lesser of two evils. But I don't think that's true. And even if it were true, these two are so evil. I can't pick either. I couldn't even consider picking either one.
Yeah, I agree.
There's so much
100%.
The same. I mean, haven't you seen that YouTube video where it basically shows just clips from them? It's not like a talking head. It's not somebody complaining about them. It's just they're both of their clips back to back on the same issues. And it's not even that they take the same stance.
It's almost the same words.
Almost the same words.
It's like they have the same speechwriter. Yeah.
That's
no resolution. Just who sounds better lying, I guess, is the case.
Yes. Yes.
Now, I was actually thinking about calling this episode, if Romney and Obama got cancer, we'd smile. Nima, can you stand behind that, or do I need to make it say Michael would smile?
Well, you know, I think I'd – either way, I don't know. Something about Romney just scares the hell out of me. Obama,
well, here's my thing. Here's my thing. My mother and my daughter died of cancer. My daughter smoked pot and broke the law to do it. Even on this one issue on pot, on medical marijuana, both of them are horrible. You know,
yeah.
Obama lied and said he'd decriminalize it and then laughed at people who asked about it afterwards. And Romney is, you know, there's clips of him telling like a sick guy in a wheelchair, no, you shouldn't be able to have your medicine. I really think if both those guys got cancer, I would smile. I wouldn't go as far as to say like, I hope they get cancer. It's just so evil. I don't know if you've ever had someone in your life with cancer, but it's like, I'll smile if either of them get cancer. That's how evil I think they are.
Well, I mean, they consider themselves exempt from the law. So it's not like they'd be like, oh, man, I can't smoke a joint even though I got cancer.
I know.
They would just smoke the pot and the Secret Service would be like guarding them, you know? They don't care.
Mm-hmm. And lighting it for them. Here, sir.
Lighting it for
them.
Lights
your joint.
Yeah, exactly. So I really appreciate what you guys do. I do keep track of what you're up to. I didn't know what the podcast would be about today. And when you do actually put them up live, I don't really have a chance to see them at that moment. But
is it ever Michael, about anything?
Cool guy, man.
Where do you live? What city?
Actually, mid-city at this point. Oh. L.A.
Ah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, man. Starving in a Company of Beautiful Women is a great book, and read it a couple times. I actually asked you if I could use some of your word lyrics in my songs. As long as I give you some credit, you said it was no problem.
Cool.
Nice. Did you make, cat fan, too. So
did you make the songs yet? Can I hear them sometime?
Yeah, definitely. I can send you something. You are in Wyoming at this point, right?
Yeah, send me a link. I like downloads, not mail.
All right, man. Sounds like a plan.
Because I have to leave.
Keep up what you're doing, and thanks again, man.
Cool, man. Thanks.
Appreciate the call.
Bye, Rob. Bye, Rob. So, Nima, what do you think of that concept?
That you'd smile if Mitt Romney or Barack Obama got cancer?
Yeah. Either one of
them. I mean, I'd probably crack a smile or a smirk. I mean, I don't know. I like to stay away from wishing bad things on other people.
I'm not wishing. Originally, I was thinking of like, I wish they'd get cancer.
You're saying if it did happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if it happened to both of them, I might reconsider my deism, my belief that the creator of the universe does not grant miracles.
Nice. I might think
it would be proof to me that there is a loving God if both of those guys got cancer.
Go.
I'll say it.
That's a better phrasing. I like that.
Really?
I can co-sign that. Okay. Sure. Because it'd be them getting their comeuppance. Remember when Barack was campaigning in 2008? He had a talking point of saying that, yeah, he smoked pot and he inhaled. And he said this. There's another clip on YouTube that shows him explaining this. And it was like three or four different talk shows or venues where he almost uses the exact wording again. He says, yeah, I smoked pot and I inhaled. I mean, that was the point. And he says it like he's all clever or something, like, yeah, I'm cool. And it was the same thing every time.
But I still want to bust you for it. Yeah, he's like, I'm hipper than Bill Clinton. I inhaled. And he did coke, he said in his book. But, you know, he still wants to throw you and all the black people in jail for it.
Yeah, just the height of hypocrisy. If you want to complain about that too, give us a call.
Hi, I'm Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends podcast, and I'm excited about Vaporsmith's electronic cigarettes. I dig the taste, and I dig the freedom to vape anywhere the nanny staters would wet their pants if I smoked.
Vaporsmiths.com is run by a liberty-loving entrepreneur, not some subsidized tax eater conglomerate.
I'm Michael Dean of the Freedom Fiends, and I love Vaporsmiths. I smoked 3 packs of tobacco cigarettes a day for decades, but now I'm only using Vaporsmiths. I love the flavors, I don't smell like smoke, and I save money, so I have more to spend on ammo and treats for my kitties.
Available in 4 strengths and 10 delicious flavors. Reds, Classics, Turkish, Menthol, Strawberry, Cherry, Vanilla, Coffee, Minty Mint, and Cloves. Go to Vaporsmiths.com. Use coupon code FREEDOMFIEND to get 25% off your order. This is a limited time offer. Vaporsmiths at Vaporsmiths.com. Check out the Anarchy Gumbo podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night. The Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's KittyFeet.com.
Worms.
Would you like to advertise?
Freedom Fiends Live. What it do, Fiends, and what it do, Michael Dean? So, if y'all want to call in, the number is 307-215-5171. Give us a ring on that Fiend phone so we can chat. Michael, so speaking of the military and schooling, as our first caller, Brian, was... did you hear about that U.S. military school teaching the use of total war for the war on Islam, saying that Hiroshima tactics might be necessary?
No.
Yeah. Pretty scary stuff. Here's an exact quote from some of the course material. Quote, "This would leave open the option once again of taking war to a civilian population whenever necessary, wherever necessary. The historical precedents of Dresden, Tokyo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki being applicable to the Mecca and Medina destruction DP in phase 3. This is according to Wired. And it doesn't give us what phase 3 is. I wish it would. Maybe I should actually get
the document. I wish the guys that run Wired would turn a little more libertarian. They tend to be a little bit, but they're really lefty Obama-y. And the comments, you can tell that the readers are mostly too.
I like never pick up a Wired or go to their site. I only read their articles that are linked, from other libertarians. So I read their stuff, it's always like the more libertarian-leaning stuff like this. Yeah. Or like the expose on that new site they're building, the government's building in Utah.
Yeah, they're really good about reporting on technological encroachments of freedom. But you know they wrote about how great Obama was too. So
how did they?
Yeah.
What could somebody possibly say Obama's great for? Like, I know I don't run in those circles. Maybe I should ask somebody.
Well, he's making it so gay people can get a government license now. He's talking like he's gonna.
Yeah, but Wired didn't praise Obama on that. That can't be what you're referring to, right?
I mean, you said, what did Obama do right? I mean,
yeah,
you know, the only thing he's done right was undo, really was don't ask, don't tell. And I'm really like, how unright? That's like, okay, so more people can work for the state now openly. You know?
Yeah. We open up the spectrum of people that can die for the government.
And he was just undoing something stupid that a Democrat came up with that was sort of undoing something stupid that Republicans came up with.
Yeah. So what do you think about his whole grandstanding now on picking gay marriage as like some kind of major topic for the election?
Well, it's interesting that he's talking about it like it's a revelation, because when he was a senator, he was openly, adamantly in favor of gay marriage. And then when he became a presidential candidate, he was like, I think civil unions are good, which he had to do because a lot of black churches that backed him are more adamantly anti-homosexual than your average redneck, if that's possible.
I think
he did some focus grouping and went, okay, it's time to say again that I am fully in favor of gay marriage.
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet that you're right. Yeah, totally.
So screw politics. I got a freedom fix.
All right. What's your freedom fix?
We got a note from on the Fiends forum from a listener who said, my 16-year-old son listens to the podcast with me. I think you guys make anarchism fun with your humor and irreverence. Fun enough for my kid to be listening while he plays Xbox. And he hates it when I put on the Mises Media podcast in the car. Says it sounds too much like school. Meanwhile, you and Nima crack him up. He started saying, on your knees, you dirty hippie.
Nice. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's the point, isn't it, Michael? We just want to we want to laugh at the status, not give everybody a lecture on necessarily why it's wrong.
And I love that a 16-year-old is laughing along with us, with his dad. That's a good father-son activity. And
that's
I
family
really,
values right there.
I really got off on the he thinks Mises sounds too much like school. I mean, I think Mises are incredibly solid and they're an important background. And you've listened to a lot more than I have. But, you know, listening to a lot of stuff like that in my early libertarianism kind of made me want to do the Freedom Fiends or do the movie we made. You know, it was kind of like, man, this stuff sounds like school. I don't even know if they thought that consciously, but that was kind of the feeling I had. Yeah, and it's actually produced by a school, like by an accredited university. So it
Mises
is school.
Institute. Yeah. Yeah.
Are they accredited? Do they have government sanction?
I don't know. I wouldn't think the state would accredit them. But I mean, I have never looked into that. It doesn't really matter, right? I mean, you're all about the who cares about the government anymore. So
yeah.
Who cares if they're accredited, man? I don't. They're doing more to teach people the truth than accredited universities.
You ever looked at them, pictures of their place? It's kind of cute. It's about five or six buildings, I think. I looked at it on Google Maps the other day.
They're near Auburn, Georgia, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I imagine it's beautiful out there. I mean, I've never been to Georgia, but I like that whole southern, humid, lush kind of feel. It's better than,
well,
in my opinion.
Not, it's not a sprawling campus with, you know,
with a creek running through it.
Yeah, what are the
stone walls?
What are the trees that grow in the south, famously? Cottonwood. I don't know. It's not. I mean,
in Georgia, isn't it kudzu? Isn't that what's everywhere?
Yeah, instead of Ivy League, it's kudzu. Kudzu.
Kudzu League.
Kudzu is yeah, because they both do like grow as vines that you can't get rid of, and they encompass things.
Yeah,
it's pretty if it's ivy. It's a weed. If you know what is it? A weed is just a plant, a flower in the wrong place. But
there you go. There you go. Well, I've always felt like you're right. You know, there should be a variety of libertarian-oriented media. I mean, it's just like when you're watching TV, like, yeah, every now and then you might want to watch Frontline or PBS or whatever, but, you know, sometimes you just want to watch something more fun, more irreverent.
Yeah. Yeah. Mises is like, I kind of scrolled around the corner on it. It looks like it's about four or six buildings. It's kind of Tony looking, kind of, you know, university looking, but it's like, on the other end of one side of it, there's a gas station, and on the other side is a donut shop. You know, it's kind of like in the mini mall district, but itself looks like a university.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. I don't know if there's a brook running through it. I doubt it.
It's the spring of freedom where you can refresh your anarchist desires.
It looks like it's across the street from another, like a big college, because there's a giant like soccer field or sports field across the street that I don't think is their when the listing on the map for what the university is doesn't include that part. I think it's
here's what I wonder,
a statist
like,
school.
When you think of schools, you think of that's where, you know, people protest when they're angry at the government and stuff. But you never see like photos of people protesting at Mises.
Where would you protest at Mises?
I don't know.
If some libertarian, like, you know, sent his statist kid there and said, like, you know, you don't get my inheritance unless you go to this school. I guess there could be, like, one guy in the quad with a sign that says, like, more welfare for crack mothers and corporations or something.
Right, right. Like the dependency-minded people in the state of state project.
They
what
probably,
is that?
One of the teachers would probably just bring them out and laugh at them. Oh, the more state project? What is it?
I don't know. It's pretty funny.
The parody of the Free State Project? Yeah. Yep. So there's something I want to talk about on Wednesday at length, but really briefly about presidential pardons, which first of all is like an insane thing that a president can pardon somebody. It's like it's taken from kings, you know? Obama has – I mean all presidents pardon people and they all pardon a turkey too before Thanksgiving, which is really kind of making fun of the fact that they have this power. You know, they free a turkey from the slaughter. But Obama has pardoned, you know, not an extraordinary number of people, but it's interesting that he will give no explanation of why he pardoned any of them. And I looked at the list of them, and it's like, it's a bunch of people with like major drug convictions, like, you know, importing like not major, but like, you know, 40 kilos of coke, and like a guy who, you know, like machine possession of a machine gun, and like all these things that Obama, you'd think he'd want to throw away the key on these people. And I'm like, what favor did these guys do for Obama that he's pardoning them, you know?
Yeah. And how unfair is that? I mean, he has no qualms about the whole drug war and people that aren't his homies or his friends getting thrown in cages for the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. But then he'll go ahead and pardon whoever. I mean, how unfair is that? What a hypocrite you are, Barack Obama. Not only are you a blood-soaked baby killer, like Scott Horton says, but you're like the world's biggest hypocrite.
Worms.
Politicians doing this to drug dealers is nothing new. Wasn't there – I think it was Orrin Hatch, of all people, conservative senator from Utah, who really was a fan of the guy who produced the first Fugees album. And the guy who produced the first Fugees album was like caught in an airport with some liquid cocaine. And Orrin Hatch – I mean, he doesn't have the power to pardon him, but he actually like fought on his behalf. And I was just like, man, that is so weird. You of all people. And yet Orrin Hatch probably has no qualms about everybody else in the world who gets caught for drugs.
I think most congressmen could get someone pardoned. They just call the governor. Governors can pardon people for state crimes, and the president can pardon
people
for federal crimes.
This wasn't in Utah. I mean, the producer of the Fugees album, I don't think, has ever been to Utah.
How do you try to avoid?
Yeah. Worms. Although worms. I guess Mormons are kind of refugees, so maybe it'd be a neat little thing.
Yeah, Fugees means refugees, if you don't know. Fugees. For all you squares out there, for all you hip-hop impaired people, unlike me, I'm down, man. I'm down. I watched the 50 Cent movie the other day. It's pretty good.
Nice.
Get rich or die trying, bitches.
Hey, Claire, have you heard about Flaming Freedom's bigger gay addiction?
Nima. What to do, fiends? What's up, Michael?
Worms.
Just worms, man. Yeah. This is the Freedom Fiends. You can call us at, let me get that number. That's 307-215-5171. And we've also got a new way you can contact us. You can email us to TalkBack. Is that TalkBack@FreedomFiends.com, Michael?
Yep.
TalkBack@FreedomFiends.com. We just got our first TalkBack during our live show. That was Derek. He says, too busy to call in, frowny face, but I'll be listening. Happy Mom's Day to all the breeding female fiends.
Yeah. I'd like to hear from more breeding female fiends, breeding or otherwise. I feel sometimes like our listenership is 99.999% male, but actually I think it's women just contact and call in less often. Maybe they're a little less distraught with the world and calmer because they bring life into the world. I don't know.
That's a good theory, but we do have some female listeners. I mean, we've got our Freedom Fiend model. She's a big fan.
Yeah.
We've had a few people who write us back and say, hey, great job.
Yep. And we got the donation from the homeschool mom in Texas this week. Oh. And we got Jillian as a listener. She's also a homeschool mom, but she giggles uncontrollably, so she won't call in. She's probably listening with her son. It's probably part of the homeschooling, I would think.
I would hope.
Yeah.
I would hope. So speaking of breeders and non-breeders,
Rand Paul, man, he is so square. He said, I didn't think Obama could get any gayer.
You know, I laughed so hard when he told me that over the break. I just thought it was hilarious. I mean, I'm not like anti-gay or anything. I think people should be, you know, free. Their bodies are their own. But that is so the way like somebody would say it in Texas, man. That's so gay. I didn't think Obama could get any gayer. But, yeah. I mean, what's up with Rand Paul being, you know, statist, at least more statist than his dad?
He's like, rebelling against his dad's libertarianism by being right. A more statist.
I was going to say, aren't kids supposed to be, like, more anarchist and
no, if that were true with every successful generation, it would be total anarchy in a good way right now.
Yeah.
No, people rebel against their parents. They do the opposite of what their parents do.
Yeah.
In a way. In some way.
In some way, yeah. I think what you try to do is you try to capture whatever you felt was lacking or pursue whatever interests you felt weren't pursued in your childhood, I guess to make up for lost time or whatever the case is.
Did you have a happy childhood?
It was mixed. I mean, it was really fun at times. I feel like I got a lot of good opportunities, you know, but it was pretty turbulent. You know, my mom's on her fourth husband now. I was always moving around. Some of the stepdads in between were abusive to either her or me. You know, there were times when I'd go visit my dad and I'd come back to visit and we would have moved to a new place. It's like, oh, great. I don't live where I used to live anymore.
Did they tell
and
you?
I didn't. No, no. There are quite
they didn't
few,
tell you? Like you went and tried to put the key in the lock and they'd moved?
Well, this was before I was, you know, driving and had my own key. This was my dad would, you know, they'd call and tell my dad and he would say, you're going to a different place. We're driving you home to a different home now.
Ah.
And so, you know, I'd get home and be like, okay, this is my new bed. Yay.
But your mom did a good job with you. You love her and really dig her.
Oh, yeah. I love my mom. Totally love for Mom's Day. It was her a-hole husbands in between there that did us wrong.
You get along with your dad, too, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, totally I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you. I'm trying to, like, praise parents here for Mother's Day as much as we can.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, people do hate on single parents a lot, but, you know, there's always exceptions to things. And I had my mom as a single parent for a time, you know, except when she was married to various stepdads. But my dad, he never gave up on us. Like when we first moved away to Texas, he would visit us literally every month. He would fly into Texas. You know, he was pretty well off back then. So I'd still see my dad, you know, more than some kids who live in the same town as their dads see their dad. And it was always quality time. You know, we'd get to go stay with his family, his Persian family. I'd get exposed to the language, new foods, the culture. I had a pretty good childhood in a lot of ways, but you know, nobody's childhood is perfect. Everybody goes through trials and horrible times. And I did too.
I like that we're talking about this. I've never heard this on any alternative media. I've only heard it in the sense of like Stefan Molyneux saying, so tell me why you had a bad childhood and I'll tell you what I think about it. You know, it's more like just, hey, let's talk about it, man. I want to do anything that isn't what I typically hear on libertarian media, which
isn't being done. Yeah.
Not just to be contrary, but I'm really sick of it, man. LRN is like the greatest thing in the world. I call it the libertarian or the ANCAP NPR, because it's like similar in that it's 24/7 rotating, excellent production, varied types of programming, but it's all
and
about
you can
the
just
same.
Listen to it all day.
And you listen to it all day, even if it's just in the background, you know, like people do with NPR. That's what LRN is to me and other people. But you know, it's a sample of the best libertarian media out there, and anarchist and anarcho-capitalist media out there. And I hear the same things reported over and over and over. I hear the same, you know, like, which is one reason I try to find like news items from years ago or news items that aren't just, you know, reported on the Alex Jones site. Not anything. I'm not saying anything bad about the people who do it. I'm just trying to reach to something greater or something different, you know?
Right. Well, you've got a really good philosophy in that I've heard you say or I've read something you've written where you basically say the reason I make art is because I see something that doesn't exist in the world and I want it to exist.
Exactly.
So that's the kind of art I make. And I think that's a great philosophy not only for art but for everything, for entrepreneurship. If you think of something that doesn't exist in the world, that's your chance.
You know,
that's what people need to be creating.
Bad Quaker wrote us on Facebook, and I love Bad Quaker, and he made a suggestion. I'm fine with – I think you should run with this if you dig it. But he was like, hey, you should do some libertarian parody songs, kind of like Weird Al Yankovic, but with libertarian lyrics, and I've got some already if you want to do it. And I had just finished watching, like moments earlier at 4 in the morning, I just finished watching what war movie was it? What movie was it, DJ? The one with Animal Mother in it and Sergeant Private Snowball. Full Metal Jacket.
Okay.
It's one of the greatest movies ever made. It's mind-blowing, you know.
I need to see it. I haven't seen it. It's Stanley Kubrick, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I love Clockwork Orange. It's like
everything
one of my favorite movies ever.
Kubrick was a great master of the art of film in a lot of ways. He was really innovative. He was really good. He didn't do that many films. I think he did like 10 or 12 films, and they were all extraordinary and extremely different. You know, he did 2001 A Space Odyssey. He did Clockwork Orange. he did, you know, this, and it's not a typical war movie. It's very bizarre.
He didn't have a specific shtick. It was just amazing every time, but not because of the same reasons.
And it's like, after watching that war movie, you know, if someone asked me, hey, you want to write some parody songs? I'm like, what? Huh? No, man, I want to change the world. Which, in a way, I mean, a parody song could change the world because that stuff tends to go viral and can reach more people than the carefully crafted art, you know. But then again, Jessica Simpson has probably more fans worldwide than Stanley Kubrick. But, you know, who do you want to be?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of legacy?
Some people would say Jessica Simpson. Not us, obviously. Well, here's what I had written back about Bad Quaker's comment on that. I think it is okay to reference things. You know, in fact, it's so funny because what he'd mentioned was, you know, Libertarian Paradise kind of to Gangster's Paradise by Coolio. And I had that thought the other day, but it'd be Status Paradise just because it fits into the syllables better. But it wouldn't be a parody song. You know, I would reference the hook a little bit and sample it a little bit, but it'd be a new song. It wouldn't be like a word for word mimesis with different meaning.
Have at it, man.
and the only reason I wasn't really sold on it either, but there is a really nice line that Coolio says to sample that's not part of the hook. He says, "I can't live a normal life. I was raised by the state."
And a lot of rap songs will use the word the state, or they'll say, like, you know, I got my name and then I got my government name.
Yeah, yeah. Which is really interesting. It's one of the reasons I've always loved hip hop. And you can read Jay-Z's book Decoded to get more insight into this if you're into reading about hip hop instead of listening to it, which I'm kind of into both. But, you know, the black community in a lot of areas, especially, you know, with the crack and the drug war, they were almost, I don't want to say in a concentration camp, but they were sort of an underclass that was oppressed by the state and dependent on the state at the same time.
They
came into contact with tyranny a lot more than your average middle class suburban white kid.
I will say this to the Jessica Simpsons of the world, of the cheese balls. Justin Timberlake is a surprisingly good actor in the movie The Social Network.
Is he in that movie? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, he plays the guy that invented Napster or ran Napster.
He's also always funny on SNL, and whenever they do the spoofs on SNL with Andy Samberg,
his
like
music,
Dick in a Box.
Yeah, his music's actually pretty good for what it is, but it kind of seems to me like it's because you can buy the best producers there are and vocal coaches. I can't look at that guy and think he's got it in his soul, you know, but his music,
well,
it's hard to say.
It is hard to say. And the other thing about the best producers is, you know, the best producers also like him and like to work with him. Like Timbaland totally co-signs him. Yeah. And so I could see him having...
It's because they got Timber in their name.
I never thought of that.
Yeah, maybe a spokeswoman gives birth to a...
So we're between commercials here, and we got our friend Garrett from the Disindoctrination Podcast. What's up, Garrett? This is going into the archives, by the way.
Awesome. Always fun to listen to the jaw flapping in between the segments.
On the fiend chives.
The what flapping?
Jaw flapping.
Jaw flapping. Okay.
So do you like Justin Timberlake?
Actually, you know, that's kind of why I called.
Really?
Because he is a really good actor. I
know.
Have you guys seen Alpha Dog?
No.
Okay.
I've heard
that
of it. Never seen it.
That's an awesome flick. I think that was one of the first movies he actually did. But it's just like they abduct this kid and like they're like kidnapping him because this other guy owes him money for drugs or something. And then it just like keeps on snowballing. And then all of a sudden they realize they're like way in over their heads and they have to decide whether or not to kill the kid. It's really a neat story.
I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. In one picture, he really looks like Eminem, and in another picture, he's golfing and looks like a preppy.
He's a performer, man. That's what he's good. That's why he's a good actor, because he can take on different, you know, personas.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
beats all the boy band garbage.
Yeah.
So what's up, Nima?
I'm chilling, man. Just talking BS on a radio show. What are you up to?
He was in the Mickey Mouse Club. That's where he got discovered.
Yep.
Justin Timberlake.
Him and Britney and Christina Augie Doggie.
Christina Augie Doggie. Let me check. Yeah. I think we're almost back on. Hold up. Nah. I think we're on after the next ad, guys. So give us a second.
I can't believe you haven't seen Full Metal Jacket, Nima.
I know. There's so many. I can't believe
people are always hating on me for not seeing enough movies.
You know, I think, though, that it's more indicative of, like, my generation and a little younger looking at your generation and going, like, there's, like, it's not, it seems like there's not respect for the elders or some crap. But, you know, really, it's like, I mean, I don't know any of the hip hop artists you like, except, like, the Beastie Boys and NWA.
You like Jay-Z.
I like Jay-Z.
Hey, yeah. We're back live.
Cool. Yeah. We got a caller here.
What's up, Freedom Fiends? We got another libertarian podcaster here. What's up, Garrett?
What's happening, guys?
It's Garrett from the Disindoctrination Podcast who was just saying, I can't believe Nima hasn't seen Full Metal Jacket.
That's okay. I mean, at least you've seen...
It's got so many great lines in that movie, man. One of my favorite is like, soldier, why are you wearing a peace sign and your helmet says Born to Kill? And he says... Sir, I think I was trying to make it a comment on the dichotomy of man. And the sergeant's like, what?
The come on, what? I never knew that's where Me Love You Long Time came from.
Me Love You Long Time. Yeah, that's a sample from that movie, from the hooker coming up to them in Vietnam. Yeah.
Nice. Well, see, I've seen so many references to Full Metal Jacket, like, every cartoon probably ever has done some kind of parody. Most sitcoms have done some kind of parody. It's sampled in rap songs. I haven't seen it, but I have seen, you know, I've seen Clockwork Orange. I've seen Dr. Strangelove or How I Came to Love the Bomb.
I didn't really love that movie. That's my least favorite movie by him. It's too weird.
I thought it was pretty good. It was really weird. I loved the paranoid general who thought the Russians were going to steal our vital fluids. And he was anti-fluoridation because he thought it was a Soviet plot.
You know what's bizarre to me about that movie that I've seen it like 8 times and I watched it the other day and then looked up the credits. The guy who plays Pyle, you know, the soldier that shoots himself and kills himself. Do you know who plays him?
Mm-mm. Yeah, that's the dude from SVU or whatever. Law and Order. One of the Law and Orders.
Vincent D'Onofrio or Onofrio. Offrono.
Well, see, that's another thing I wouldn't know because I never watch Status Victims Unit or...
Vincent
or
also played Abby Hoffman in the movie Steal This Movie. It's based on the life of Abby Hoffman.
Hey, he doesn't look a thing like he did back then. Like, yeah. He was all pudgy and like...
Yeah. He gained weight for that, actually, though, and he's really young in it. Adam Baldwin is also in that movie, who's not one of the Baldwins, but is an actor I really like. Plays Animal Mother, the really badass machine gunner. He's also in, what's the movie that takes place on a spaceship that we like? You know, the one that's kind of libertarian. DJ?
What? Takes place on a spaceship.
Firefly.
That really narrows it down.
He plays Jane. Jane Cobb in Firefly.
Okay, if you're going to call it a movie, get it right. It's Serenity's the movie.
Yeah, okay.
Firefly is like the most epic sci-fi out there. I cannot believe.
Nima, have you seen Firefly?
Man, y'all are just hanging up on me.
Go ahead and do it. You've never seen Firefly? Oh my God, man. Firefly is
It was short-lived.
Yeah.
It's only like 12 episodes, I think.
Yeah, it's got a huge following, though, that does not include Nima.
I'm pretty sure it's on Hulu. I'll
dude, it's great. And it's really libertarian, and it's like everybody has guns, and it's kind of like... guns are used in self-defense only by our heroes, but they're really funny about their use of guns. And their guns are like the prop making in it is great because they take like, you know, modern guns and make them look steampunk and antique, but it takes place in the future.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
They're
the outcasts. They're out on the outer rims of the universe, like eluding the state.
Yeah. Yeah, the state.
Okay. So
there's
like an evil empire state in the universe or something.
Yeah, and these people. Okay. I mean, I do have a problem morally with some of the things that our heroes do for a living. They basically rob people, but they mostly rob bad people.
Right. Do they rob the
state?
Then,
well, see, there was one.
Oh, they rob the state whenever they can.
They stole a bunch of like medicine or something. They were going to sell it, and then they found out it was going to like this whole village of people, and they returned it.
Yeah, and that's another one of those shows that, like, the alternate universe takes place in the Conejo Valley where I used to live. Like, most of that is filmed in Agora and Thousand Oaks and around Malibu Canyon. Yep.
Nice. Well, did you call in to talk about movies, Garrett?
Actually, I kind of did.
Nice.
You want to talk about Justin Timberlake, your boy Timberlake.
That's right. He wanted to talk about
it. I'm telling you. It's like you guys are saying, he is a really good actor. I've seen a couple of the Saturday Night Lives he's done. They're funny.
Yeah. No, I have seen him on SNL, and yeah, he's hilarious, especially the musical skits or the digital shorts like Dick in a Box. Can I say Dick on the radio?
Yeah.
Dick in a Box?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Dick in the Box is one of the funniest things you'll ever see. YouTube it if you haven't seen it. Have you seen it, Michael? There. How's that?
What?
You like tables turned on? Dick in a Box.
What? No.
No, you haven't.
You know what, though? No one's going to write in and say, I can't believe you haven't seen Dick in a Box. Dick in a Box. I don't know what Dick in a Box is, but I can tell you, man, it's no Full Metal Jacket. It ain't going to be revered in 20 years like Full Metal Jacket is. Dick in a Box.
Fine. Hate on my Dick in a Box. I don't care.
The only things that people say, I can't believe Nima hasn't seen, are like great works of art for the ages. You know, it's not Dick in a Box.
I still want to see Moon. You guys were talking about that a few weeks ago.
You have to see Moon. Yeah, there. Yeah. I hope we didn't spoil it too much, though, because part of the loveliness of Moon is going on the journey with the main character.
It's so long ago, though, and you know, he probably forgot all the details we said.
I hope so.
Actually, I remember the ending, but that's okay.
Okay. Either way.
The way you guys were describing it, it reminded me of that movie Source Code.
Yeah. Source Code. Isn't that by the same director?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is.
Okay.
Because I think a few casts later, you were talking about Source Code.
Yeah.
And talking about how great it was.
Yeah, it's the same director, David Bowie's son.
Proud of myself for figuring out
Duncan
that movie
Jones
before the end.
Yeah. Source Code is a little more mainstream and a little less weird, if that's possible, although Source Code is one of the weirdest mainstream-ish movies I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you smoke enough pot before you rewatch the other movie, you'll forget the ending.
You'll forget it.
Yeah. Although you should only smoke pot. You should only smoke pot in international waters.
Okay, well, that's ridiculous.
Or on Antarctica.
Did you know, wasn't there some like pundit like Cronkite or somebody who for a news piece like went out in international waters where there's no federal law and smoked pot and reported on it?
God, I hope so. Where can I find that? That would be some interesting video. I would love to watch that. Yeah. I remember, I don't know if it was a joke or not, but there was a documentary on the down south screwed and chop DJ screwed up click movement, and this white guy, he was like all reporter style, he was sort of the narrator, and he went down and drank codeine with a bunch of rappers and reported on it, and that was pretty hilarious.
Drank what?
Codeine syrup,
dude. It was Purple William drink. F. Buckley. William F. Buckley went out in his yacht to international waters to smoke pot without breaking U.S. law.
Like one of the fathers of modern neocon grandstanding?
Yeah. Although that's kind of funny, too, that, like, you know, I don't think he even reported on it. I think he went out there just because he's such a statist. He's such a statist. You want to see what all the hubbub was about, but he's such a statist.
But he didn't want to break the law.
Yeah. Although, you know, unless somebody grew the pot out there and met him out there, he's breaking international law by having it wherever he's docked and leaves, if it's America.
Yeah, and technically, shouldn't it be out of his system before he comes back?
There you go.
Screw otherwise, that, he's still considered in consumption. Just go out to the shed, man. That's all you need.
Marijuana interferes with short-term memory, so users forget what they just said or did. Not only that, marijuana interferes with short-term memory, so users forget what they just said or did.
That reminds me of that scene out of Half-Baked.
I don't remember any scenes out of Half-Baked.
I
did not see Half-Baked. How's that?
You did not see Half-Baked.
Say it,
Nina.
Say it.
Ugh. You have to see Half-Baked, man.
No, you know what? That doesn't qualify.
No, that's not Half-Baked.
That's legendary comedic stuff, but it's really not art for the ages. So really, it's not as devastating for you to say that to me.
That's, I'm not trying to devastate you.
That's like classic stoner flick.
Nima, you could say to me, Michael, I can't believe you just for the first time saw Get Rich or Die Trying.
I haven't even seen Get Rich or Die Trying. I've never been a big 50 Cent fan. Like,
he's not that good, man. I can't believe even before the slur from the bullet in his face. I think he's only cool. Right. I think the cool thing to him is that he survived 9 bullet hits, you know?
Yeah. Street cred. you know, high level.
I heard that after that, he said in some documentary that after that happened, other rappers went out and like had their friends shoot them to try to get the same.
I think that was a plot from a Boondocks episode.
Ah, that's it. There you go.
No, it wasn't really, but it.
I was in school when 50 Cent was up on his big rise, and it was just gross watching all my buddies around me getting all like gangster.
The worst thing I remember. They didn't have Tupac
or Biggie anymore, so now they're looking right at 50 Cent.
Yeah, yeah. Who is not on their level at all. The worst thing I remember was when 50 was first getting big, I was in Salt Lake for the summer, and there was this awesome tour that came around. It was like Jay-Z, Snoop Dogg. And of course, 50 Cent. And I was like, okay, you know, 50's not that bad. I can watch him in between Snoop Dogg and Jay-Z. I mean, because I'll get to see Snoop Dogg and Jay-Z. But all the little white Mormon kids in Utah sang along to all of 50 Cent songs. They had no idea what Jay-Z was rapping about. They couldn't follow him. And I was just like, facepalm. Like, what the hell? 50, really? Instead of Jay-Z? Like,
I don't know,
like,
that I've ever been to an actual rap show.
They can be really good or really bad. It just depends.
Actually, I was jealous. My sister went to the Up in Smoke tour back in
nice.
What was that, like 01 or something? I was so jealous.
Yeah, Snoop Dogg is great live. Like, he'll freestyle, like, stuff you've never heard before. When he played this concert I was at, he had, like, a 9-piece or a 7-piece funk band. And he's a showman, too. He'd, like, bring on his old uncle or stuff and smoke pot with him and, like, yell at the cops and say, watch me smoke this blunt, cops. And he was great, man. Devin the Dude is also really amazing live. Like, do you listen to Devin the Dude, Garrett? You know who he is?
Never heard of him.
Oh, man, you smoke pot and you don't know who Devin the Dude is? You gotta
pick. What?
You know, I've had kids take me to task and saying, like, Like acting like they're gangster and they're hip and they're down with the scene and they're hip hop and they're rap, and they like look at me and I'm like, dude, what are you talking about? You live with your mom and I own guns. Leave me alone. I carry guns and I own a bunch of gold. Leave me alone. I'm more gangster than you.
I was gangster before you started school.
No, but Devin the Dude isn't even gangster. He's just like,
oh, he's funny.
Laid back. I need some booms.
I need some booms. Isn't he the one that says, I need some booms?
Yeah, no, I need a boom. Yeah, he's hilarious.
He kind of sounds like George Bush in that, man.
Yeah.
I need
some boom. Well, that's his Texas redneck accent. He does it a lot.
Isn't he from Texas?
Yeah, he's from East Texas, but now he sort of lives in Houston because that's where all the music's at. Yeah. I think we might be on the air.
You're going to die from high blood pressure and a lot of shiny guns.
I don't even know what we recorded. I'm just talking with my friend Garrett and Nima, man. I don't know.
You can watch the audio video cam and chat with other listeners.
Yeah, but it's all recorded for the Fiend Kives.
That's cam.lrn.fm.
Now we're back on. Freedom Fiend. Live.
So we're talking about how William F. Buckley, the squarest guy in the world, once sailed out into international waters and smoked pot so he wouldn't break laws.
Did he like take a little toke off of a marijuana cigarette, or did he like take a blunt to the face, or like a gravity bong? Like, I want to know how he smoked it.
I think William F. Buckley got baked and snorted coke off the breast of a bunch of Thai young
of Thai ladyboys.
Ladyboys. I don't know.
I doubt it. I bet you he took one puff and he's like, I'm not even high. Stupid.
Probably, man. Yeah, yeah. He should have taken acid so he didn't become such an evil neocon. Huh? You say sometimes it doesn't work the first time?
Yeah, I'm sure somebody had to explain that to him, which I think is baloney.
Yeah, I think it's baloney too. I've heard that before, but I remember when I was like 13 or something, and I got a hold of some.
That was my stepson calling from Basic. We haven't heard from him in 6 weeks. I gave it to DJ.
Really?
She can talk to him. But okay. You sound good.
Is he done with Basic now? Is he?
I think so, because I think the thing is, like, they can't talk to you until they're done with Basic. You know, they can't call home. So, and he's been about 6 weeks. So yeah. Anyway,
grew up the brainwashing.
Anyway, go back to what you're talking about. I don't want to comment on that on the air. I was just happy.
I forgot what we were talking about.
Dude, I can't believe you didn't smoke pot with William F. Buckley in international waters.
I know, man. What's wrong with you? Every self-respecting libertarian has smoked pot with William F. Buckley in international waters.
Well, he's trucked with some libertarians, hasn't he? And then, like, denounced them.
I had thought so, man. I don't know. It's weird to know all the OG drama from back in the 60s and 70s and whatever.
Yeah, that's, you do. That. How come? How come you know stuff that happened when I was a kid before you were born that I don't even know about? Because you listen to Mises podcasts?
Yeah. That's Jeff Rickenbach reading Murray Rothbard to me. That's why.
Did you just butt dial there, Garrett?
I don't think so.
Garrett, did you wake up today and go into international waters and smoke pot and then get helicoptered back to land?
No, I'm not that square.
Well, Garrett was bringing up the point that he doesn't even think William F. Buckley actually got high, because, you know, some people say that, you know, it doesn't work the first time. I was calling BS on that.
Okay, here I'm reading from Wikipedia. Buckley was an advocate for the legalization of marijuana and wrote a pointed pro-legalization piece for the National Review, which he was the editor of. It's like the squarest paper in the world. In 2004, in the piece, Buckley calls for conservatives to change their views on legalization. I don't want to keep reading. I want to keep reading, but I have a feeling it's going to get to 2 years ago. He changed his mind. I know it's going to get there, man.
we can save it for the Wednesday cast so we can actually look up what his deal is.
Oh, however, in his December 2007 column, Buckley seemed to advocate banning tobacco use in America. So he went from thinking pot should be legal to thinking everything should be a little bit illegal. I don't know, man.
Maybe it's the weather vane effect. So back in the 60s or 70s or whenever, when everybody was smoking pot, he was like, yeah, man, maybe this is what's hip. And now everybody's like, we must ban tobacco in bars. And he's like, yeah, we must.
So anyone who doesn't know who William F. Buckley is, without going into a whole lot of detail, I'm looking at a picture of him from 1986 at Ronald Reagan's birthday party sharing a joke with Ronald Reagan. So there you go.
A picture of him sharing a joke.
Instead of sharing a toke.
Right.
William F. Buckley, he's quick with a joke and a light of your smoke, but there's somewhere that he'd rather be.
Is that Piano Man?
Yeah, it's Piano Man.
Man's great, man.
MWD and original.
Piano Man Square?
Nope, that's Piano Billy Joel of all people.
Yep.
I don't think I've ever liked any other Billy Joel song, but for some reason, I think Piano Man is like one of the best songs ever.
It's a great song. You know what it's about? Or when he wrote it, was like he got signed to a record contract, and then like the contract got killed, the record didn't come out, and he was owned by the record company and couldn't perform under his own name. But to make a living and to like keep up his chops, he got a job as a piano player in some bar, like under a fake name, and just played show tunes and stuff for people.
Nice. So it was about his own experience as being sort of a piano whore.
Yeah. And the line about – he's talking about the bartender, and he says, and he's quick with a joke or a light of your smoke, but there's somewhere that he'd rather be.
Yeah. And the businessmen slowly get stoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that's a great song. I remember going to a piano bar in Austin, and the piano player played that, and like the whole bar sang along, and it was just like amazing.
Yep. It's a waltz too. It's in 3/4 time.
Is it? Oh, yeah. I guess I haven't really analyzed it.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3.
I counted the last part wrong, but yeah. Worms. Dope. Worms. So, Garrett, anything else other than movies, pot, William F. Buckley you had on your mind?
Actually, I was actually just thinking about it while Michael was singing or counting off there.
Well, Michael was teaching us our numbers.
You're making all the beats, right?
All what beats?
I don't know. Like I hear so much music from you guys, and I can't tell who's making what.
It's about half and half.
I wanted to
figure
out what programs you're using.
It's about half and half.
Let's talk about recording for the rest of the cast, man. I could do this. All right.
Okay.
Cool.
So I guess I'll go first. So what I use is Cubase as my, I guess they call it a digital audio workstation or a DAW. That's what I record things into. So that's if I'm like actually playing stuff myself.
It's the multi-track program, you know,
multi-track.
The multi-track tape and a few other things.
It's kind of like Pro Tools, but cheaper and kind of like
it's Pro Tools for rappers, man.
There you go. And so that's what I use.
Everything's
if I'm, like,
pictographic.
Or,
it's for people that can't read. They have like pictographs for everything, like in that, Idiocracy.
That's not true at all. That's racist.
Here's something that's racist that I think is kind of funny is there's this program a lot of hip hoppers and rappers use, and the hippers and the hoppers, called it used to be called Fruity Loops, and now what's it called?
Fruity Loops.
But it's called something else.
FL Studio.
FL Studio. Yeah, Fruity Loop Studio. It's called FL Studio, which is, I think it's just like when it, you know, they didn't know who was going to use it when they made it. And it took off in the rap world. And I think that a lot of rappers didn't like using something that had the word
called Fruity Loops.
Yeah. So they changed it.
It's possible. But everybody still knows it's Fruity Loops.
What I'm using then.
So yeah, we did, like, when we made the rap, the hip hop songs for the movie, and I wish I could cue one up right now so we could show what we're talking about. We did it different ways. Like, We Will Not Disarm, the music that plays at the beginning of the Wednesday cast, the We Will Not Disarm, We Will Not Lie Down.
Own lyrics wrong.
I know. There you go. I need to go out in international waters and take some more hippie Valium. It was basically like I came up with I said, this song needs a hook. And I sat down and just wrote that on the spot. Like, Neem and I were working together. And I wrote the guitar and then put some bass under it. And then we looped it. So a lot of it is like actual instruments, but then looped. And we used some actual drum sounds in that too. We used like sampled punk rock drum stuff. And then Nima, you played keyboards over a lot of stuff too. What did you use?
I did keyboards. I've got a Micro Korg. I also use Reason sometimes as a soft synth. And the way I sequenced it all was in my MPC. I've got an MPC 500. If you've ever watched what's that hip hop movie with? I don't even remember.
Get Rich or Die Trying.
No, it's not lame like that. Oh, it's No, I can't even remember now. But an MPC is basically a drum machine or a sampler, and you punch the pads.
It's basically a dedicated computer for making hip hop. It's about the size, a quarter the size, about half the size of a six pack of beer, or a third of the size of a six pack of beer.
Is that the little drum pad featured in one of your videos?
Yeah, we show Neiman with his nerd glasses on in my basement playing it with his fingers.
I looked one of those up on Google. They're like $300-$400 or something.
The cheap one that I have, what I have is like the Game Boy of it. It's like the portable one. Like, you can put batteries in it and take it anywhere. That, when I bought it, it was $500 or $600, I think. And the price has gone down. It's like $350, $400. So it's pretty affordable. Like, the really nice ones are like $2,500. And they're like ridiculous. Super nice. They've got more pads and they show you the waveforms. And they're just awesome. But we'll talk more about recording at the end of this break in our last segment. Stay with us, fiends.
Worms.
Have you been looking for a safe, scenic, and inspiring place to live free? We chose Wyoming. Wyoming is the home of Free State Wyoming and the personal choice of Boston Tea Party, as well as the setting of his book, Moulin LaBaye. Bring the family and stop by for the 2012 Free State Wyoming Jamboree for 4 days of camping, shooting, and barbecue. There'll be trading, hiking, a raffle, and plenty of activities for the kids. Admission is free for those under 18. Entrance and 4 days camping is $15. It's only $15 more for the barbecue and beer on Saturday. Visit freestatewyoming.org. There's even a one-day handgun course led by Boston. The handgun course is extra. The Jamboree is June 28th through July 1st in the beautiful Black Hills of Wyoming. Join us to explore our favorite area of the country and see if our choice might become your choice. That's freestatewyoming.org. See you there.
Why did you...
Repeat your question, Nima, since we're recording for the...
So, Gary, you were saying...
The archives.
When we were talking about Fruity Loops, you were saying, that's similar to what I use. So what do you use?
It's kind of like a repackaged Fruity Loops or something, since they like started charging for it now or something, is what I believe happened. But this one's called LMMS, Linux Multimedia Studio.
Oh, okay.
So it's like you got your bass track, and then, you know, you can add instruments over top of it. But you like open up the piano roll.
Yeah, piano roll. Yep.
So, I mean, I've just been like dorking around with it, making goofy little things to figure out how it works. But
do you play the notes with like a MIDI keyboard, or do you just draw the notes in the piano roll with like a mouse?
I'm using a mouse right now. That I've been looking at all the, you know, the hardware that you can use on all this stuff. But
all you need
make sure
is
it was something I was going to get into.
Right, right. I would suggest getting like an audio interface, like what Michael has is a little bit more expensive than what I have, but I use a M-Audio Fast Track Pro. It's probably old. They probably have new models of it now, but it just plugs into my computer with a USB, and it's got XLR inputs, quarter-inch inputs, RCA inputs, and MIDI inputs and outputs. So all you need then is any cheap keyboard that'll have MIDI. You plug that in, and then you can play pretty much any sound in the world as long as you have a program like what you have. Because you can, like, load new samples into it, right?
Yep.
Yep, yep. And so then you can just search the internet for samples or just do your own samples. Like, what I've been doing lately is just listening to YouTube, sort of falling down wormholes, as Michael says, with YouTube, and just finding sounds that I like, and I just sample them with my MPC. And then if I want to, I can put them in the soft synth, which what I use is Reason, and then I can just play the sound at any note with my keyboard, you know, whatever sound it is.
Well, believe it or not, the thing that actually got me interested in it was that intro you made. I forget the guy's name, the homeschooling guy, the unschooling guy you interviewed.
Yeah, James Davis.
Yeah, and you had the
I chopped up the Peanuts like, teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. I thought that was so cool. I was like, all right, I got to start playing around with some of this stuff too.
Yeah, yeah. For something like that, you really need to be able to play with your own samples and chop up stuff. So I would think you need to – I mean, you can do it with a mouse, but you just get so much more of a natural sound if you can just use your hands to play the stuff.
Right.
It just – I don't know what it is, but like I'll make a beat – and just use the mouse, like if I'm in bed with my wife and she doesn't want me to bring the keyboard into the bed. And it'll sound completely different than when she actually lets me bring the keyboard into the bed.
I'm sorry, I'm just laughing at that mental image.
it is pretty funny. Sometimes she's like, come to bed. And I like bring my computer and my audio interface. And then I run a MIDI out to my little keyboard. And I'm just sitting there with the covers over me, the laptop on my right and my keyboard on my lap. And I'm just like, and she's like reading Harry Potter or something.
Yeah. And nothing I'm doing so far sounds at all. It sounds like 8-bit, like Mario music or something.
Well, 8-bit stuff is hot too. Like, and I've been sometimes I like to just geek out and play stuff that sounds like video game music. Like at the end of the Eye on Me video, have you heard the last few seconds where it's the credits? It's the Fairy Fountain theme from Legend of Zelda.
Oh, nice. Okay, I'll have to listen for that again. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Michael, are you even around? I guess not.
Like, here, take the show, guys.
Yeah, he's like, here, you guys could just finish the show for me. Are we? I think we're live on the air too. We just talked over that
button.
No, I think we were recording through the break. Anyway, I just unmuted the server and noticed we are live on the air. We were chatting through the break. If you guys want to listen to what we were chatting about, just go download the actual archive. Yeah. And it sounds like Michael's back. I heard his chuckle. We were still talking about how to record and stuff. And I mean, Michael, you've got your own little setup and way of doing things. I've seen you. You like to put the headphones on. You actually mic an amp, plug your guitar or bass into it, and you'll like just lay down. Like, yeah,
it's like, I mean, 6 inches tall, but I turn it all the way up. And if you dub it over 2 or 3 times, it sounds like a raging Marshall.
Yeah. Well, you dub things over like 12 times. Like I've seen you sitting there. You're like, wait, I got to play the same thing over again. And then you do harmonies or you know, a different part of it. And it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I do really simple harmonies. I don't do 12 part harmonies like Queen or something, but, I do like to play with guitar and with vocals. I like to double track stuff to where I'm playing the same exact thing twice, which makes it sound way thicker. And you can sort of approximate that in software too, like using a chorus filter plugin or something or effects pedal, but it's not the same thing.
Not the same at all.
Yeah. The way you get a giant guitar sound is just playing rhythm guitar like 4 times playing the same thing. I mean, that's what Nine Inch Nails do. And then they loop that too, which we did.
Well, even if you double the track, which I've tried to cheat sometimes and just like double the track, you know, like recreate the same exact audio file on a separate track, and it will make it sound a little bit thicker, but it doesn't give you the same effect.
Right.
As when you just play the same thing twice. Because there's always, you know, infinite number of little differences that can happen that make it sound
fuller,
more alive.
You know, it's the reason that an orchestra has like 20 violin players playing the same thing. It, it used to be for volume, but now that that can be compensated with, you know, with recording, you can just turn up. Yeah, it's like you still record a chorus. I mean, you know, an orchestra still has 20 violins playing the same thing because it sweetens it and strengthens it. And of course, I got the ideas from, you know, basically like the double tracking the vocals. I got that idea from Ozzy Osbourne. Almost everything he's ever done, he's double tracked it. And it also is something that you want to get good at if you're going to do it. Because double tracking vocals, if you're not singing exactly the same thing each time, sounds bad. But if I somehow can naturally just double and sing the same thing without a lot of rehearsal or any rehearsal, like twice in a row or four times in a row, almost exactly the same, and it sounds really strong.
Yeah, and that takes practice. I mean, I do it with rapping too. And the thing is, if you're good at editing, which if you geek out and just play with whatever program you're using, you can get good enough to do this. If there is even just one syllable that's off, you can just move it over and make it exactly on point. It's pretty easy. Of course, it does take practice.
And for, you know, if people want more information on how we record the podcast, which includes some information on how we record music, if you go to the freedomfiends.com website, there is a link called How We Record that has a lengthy article that I wrote and Nima wrote some of, with pictures and screenshots. It explains a lot of it. And at the bottom of it, even in the comments in the bottom of it and in the bottom of it, there's links to some other articles that I've written on recording.
Yeah, yeah, and oh, I'd like to also put a call out again for more beats. Michael's done some work and laid me some instruments I can use, and that's great. But I'd also love some like full fledged hip hop, just hip hop only beats. If somebody could get me that, just for the sake of variety. I mean, I made a bunch myself, but I want things that sound, you know, somebody else's brain, you know, other than mine. So anybody out there who's libertarian or just listening to the show and would like to be involved in some,
would like to do some free work for NEMA for liberty. I mean,
well, I'm not even asking you to do anything new. Like in my experience, anybody who makes beats, they'll like just sit there at night and make a few.
They've got folders full of them. Be a cut creator. Be a cut creator for the fiend.
Yeah,
for the NEMA fiend.
Who was it? Chris Calder promised to get me some, and
yeah,
I think
Chris
is going to get me some, but I'm waiting.
Yeah, Chris.
On some.
So what do you got there, Garrett?
When you guys are making music, do you ever get to the point where it's like you've heard it so many times you can't tell if it sounds good anymore?
Yes.
We kind of got like that recording the songs for the movie, because recording the songs for the movies, we put ourselves under some deadlines, but we're also under some deadlines. Like Nemo was leaving town, was moving out of town, so we had to get everything done that we could do before he left town. And we did some like 24-hour sessions where like one of us would nap for a half hour while the other one worked. And, you know, we worked 24 hours straight. And writing the songs for that was a couple of those. We did two or three nights writing and recording those songs. And
I feel like for me, breaks are really important, because I know exactly what you're getting at, Garrett. Because sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm like trying to mix or master something and I'm playing with the levels. And eventually you get to a point where it just sounds bad because you've been listening to the same melody for like 5 hours and it's never going to sound good to you.
And
so
sometimes
you got to take a nap.
Or you got to take a nap. I mean, people that mix for a living, that you know, do the mix down for major label or big record stuff, like budget stuff, who do it for a living and make six figures at it and are really good at it, those people will only mix for about 6 hours a day. You know, you don't mix 12 hours a day and get the best mix you can.
Well, your ear gets tired too. So it's not just a mental thing. I think
it's
physically
your
ear hears it a little bit differently if it's been hearing the same melody over and over again for a certain number of hours.
Yep. We actually asked for a third party opinion on one of those songs. It was the part that goes, you know, where you're doing both voices, like, good morning, Senator. Here's your coffee. You know, we didn't know what to do with that break. First, it was going to be a guitar solo. And then it was like, no, I think it should be a spoken word part. And then I went up, like DJ was waking up and going to work. And I went up and explained it to her. And she made some suggestion for that we used. I can't remember. I don't know if she came up with the two people idea or what it was. But there was something that she came up with that we used in that. So sometimes it can be useful to ask for a second opinion, if it's someone whose opinion you trust. You know, there's a lot of people who give an opinion just to give one and it wouldn't be right. But DJ is generally right on with what she suggests with what I do with it.
She seems to be pretty good with that stuff.
Yeah, she's really good with writing funny stuff. or rewriting, like if we write something that's funny, she'll take it and rewrite it and make it funnier. And she's also really good at coming up with short, snappy phrases and like being given a list of short, snappy phrase ideas and picking the best ones. She came up with the tagline for the movie, "There's no such thing as half free," you know, with Neem and I were bouncing stuff back and forth and kind of in that direction, but she came up with that. What else did she come up with? She came up with a couple other short, snappy things we've used.
Too numerous to tell anymore.
Yeah.
She solidified my podcast name.
Oh, she named your podcast. That's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah.
And she kept you from naming the Gumbo Anarchy Supergroup podcast.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to even say that. Yep. Yeah, it was, you know, I said, you know, she was just getting up for work. I've been up all night working on the first episode with Ben Quaker and editing it and doing SEO and setting up the website. And I was like, yeah, I was thinking about calling this the Anarchy Supergroup podcast or the Anarchy Gumbo podcast, but I'm leaning towards Anarchy Supergroup. And she's like, that's horrible. Anarchy Gumbo is great. Go with that. And then like she jumped in the shower, you know.
Yeah. The only reason we're called the Freedom Fiends is because she didn't shoot down the Freedom Fiends. I think Michael was like, I'll check with DJ.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a, you know, that's what producers, a lot of what producers do too, or I don't even know if that's even the term, but like, there's a great scene in that movie, The Social Network. Have you guys seen that?
Yeah.
I can't believe you haven't seen
it. Of course. Neema hasn't seen it.
Gary Which has. It sounds like it'd be a dumb movie, but it's like, you know, it's written by Alan Sorkin, who's amazing. And it's directed by David Fincher, who's amazing. So it's a dumb topic, but it's a great movie. Alan Sorkin.
I don't think it's a dumb topic. I mean, Facebook is so ubiquitous. Yeah, I mean, it seems like you have to know the origin.
I don't know, but Facebook's dumb. And I do spend a couple hours a day on it.
Facebook's dumb. Why are you on it like all day?
I know. Because I'm promoting the themes, man. We'd have like a third of the following without Facebook, I think. But
exactly. You know, Facebook is a necessity.
It's work,
man.
It's my work. But there's a line in there where the guy, Justin Timberlake plays the guy who started Napster, who actually helped with getting Facebook off the ground. And it was like he had this business meeting with them in some strip club or something and talked a mile a minute and just like didn't let him get a word in edgewise and dropped all this mad science and just bragged a lot and was kind of paranoid too. And then the site at that time was called thefacebook.com. Yep. And, you know, as he gets up to leave, he pays for their dinner. He's getting up to leave. He walks away. He turns around, kind of spins on his heel and says, another thing, go with Facebook, drop the just Facebook and walks away. And it's like that was probably the most valuable thing anybody did for the Facebooks.
I mean, yeah, and it was an afterthought. Facebook sounds, you know? Awful.
Yeah,
it's so weird how awful it how big of a difference something so small can make.
Yeah, well, you know, the Facebook, it was a term before that. It was like colleges had a Facebook, which was an actual book. It was kind of like a yearbook, you know, a listing of student directory that had pictures in it, mm-hmm. and interests. And that's where they got the name for it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I just like how he picked out all of his coders.
You like how he
had them all sitting around the table and they're like, all right, you have to take a shot like every minute and get all this coding done.
Yeah.
Whoever finishes first.
While drunk. You know, yeah.
Yeah. Because if you can do it while you're drunk, you can do it fine, sober.
I like his job application process. Yeah. Code nice. While drunk. Under a time constraint.
I guess I do need to pony up and see it. We just like talked right through the second to last break and that last break. We're just still
computers, software, electronics, photos, cell phone, kitchen, pet supplies.
Is the show over?
Hardware,
yeah,
apparel,
dude. The show's been over
jewelry,
for like
grocery,
a minute and a half.
Sports and outdoors, okay. toys, games, used and
well, worms.
It's a department
I'm
store.
Still
sorry, guys.
I'll
never call it again.
That was great.
No, it's great.
Get all your
no more Hippie Valley.
Get a great deal.
Worms. I know it's the Hippie Valley, man. It's the fucking what's this stuff called?
Via shop.lrn.fm.
Melatonin. No more melatonin for me. Nah.
You too, man.
No, don't record.
This is the Central Scrutinizer. We're working very hard to spend your tax money to keep you from hearing things like freedomfiends.com. That's why we're very upset about freedomfiends.cz. Freedomfiends.cz is a Liberty Media Archive of Freedom Fiends material hosted in the Czech Republic. FreedomFiends.cz is outside the jurisdiction of the Watchers, who employ me, the Central Scrutinizer, to keep you from hearing things that might make you think. My fellow scrutinizers and I do not want you to visit freedomfiends.cz. Do not visit freedomfiends.cz.